Welcome to Shir and Shem Yishmul Parshas Nachal. The piece we're going to do tonight is on page Kuf Nun Gimel. It's taken from Shas Tov Reish Ayin Dalet, 1914. And it starts off with a statement which is not directly relevant to the Sedra, to the Parshas HaShavua. It's a statement which may be familiar to many of us and may be perplexing to many of us. And we'll see how the Shem Yishmul ultimately works it back not only into the Parshas HaShavua, but to some broader themes that have to do with Chumash in general. Says the Shem Yishmul, we find the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabba tells us Shmuel Shokul Keneged Moshe V'Aaron, that Shmuel Anavi was equal to Moshe and Aaron put together. Right, the source that the Medrash brings for that is the Pasuk, which is well known to many of us, the Pasuk which we say in Kabbalah Shabbos, Moshe V'Aaron B'Chohanav U'Shmuel B'Korei Shemo. Right, so the Moshe and Aaron were among his Kohanim, his priests, God's priests, and Shmuel was among those who called out, you know, in God's name. So says the Medrash, it talks about Moshe and Aaron in one breath, and then Shmuel in a second breath. It's to imply that Moshe and Aaron are, you know, together, are able to equal the greatness and the grandeur that's associated with Shmuel HaNavi. Now, right off the bat, this is a puzzling statement, right? It's always struck me as a puzzling statement, okay? Not to take away from Shmuel HaNavi in the slightest, but Lo Kam B'Yisrael K'Moshe Oth, right? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon HaNaviim, was the greatest of prophets. He gave us the Torah. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, he led the Jewish people, etc., etc., etc. Let's even put Aaron on the side for a moment. How can you say that Shmuel is greater than Moshe? I mean, if we took a poll, we walked out there on Grand Street and polled the average Jew walking up and down Grand Street, one would be hard-pressed to find somebody who would say that between Moshe and Shmuel, Shmuel is the greater, you know, character in Jewish history. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu clearly plays a pivotal role. And then on top of that, to say that Shmuel HaNavi is equal to Moshe and Aaron put together, right? Just it seems like an extraordinary statement, right? So what but Chazal saying? So what are Chazal driving at, you know, when they say that Moshe and Aaron together are equal to Shmuel? Pirush Kavod Kedushas Avi Admar Zatzal, again, as the Shem Yishmul is so fond of doing, he quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer, Ki Nozir Avodoso Behatsneya, Uksiv Kiyafli, V'chein Ksiv V'hu Peli, Sheperusho Nelam, V'alkein Nesar Biyayim, Shehul Aroma Kalo, Shehi Midas Halaviyim. Says the Shem Yishmul, in order to understand, again quoting his father, in order to understand what made Shmuel unique, we first have to understand what the avoda of a nazir is all about, the Nazirite. And of course we know that the nazir is described in this week's Parshas Naso, so this is how it comes back to the Parshas HaShavua. You should know, says the Shem Yishmul, that the avoda, the type of divine service that the Nazir engages in, is behatneya. It's all about what he does privately. There's certain types of avodas Hashem that Shem Yishmul is going to develop the idea. There's certain types of avodas Hashem which are done in a very public role, and there are certain types of avodas Hashem of service of God that are done in a very private kind of setting. The Nazir serves God in private. Now, what's that? A Nazirite. Okay, he says, the question is, what's a Nazirite, right? So the Pasuk talks about a Nazir, somebody who devotes his life to God, and, or I shouldn't say that, devotes a certain period of time, you know, in his life to God, maybe his entire life, maybe 30 days out of his life, maybe an in-between period, and he basically takes upon himself that he's not going to drink wine, or, you know, take anything from grapes. He's not going to come into contact with a dead body, and he's not going to cut his hair, right? So that was the three-part vow of the Nazirite, and the Torah describes how the Nazir would, you know, the laws that pertain to the Nazir. So this Nazir serves Hashem in a more private fashion. Not, you know, his Avodas Hashem is not something that's out there in public, it's more private. How do I know that? So says the Shem Yishmul, let's focus on a couple of things. First of all, why does the Nazir remove himself from wine? Right? So if you'd ask the average person, I think the average person would say, again, with tremendous basis in Chazal as well, you know, wine as an intoxicant is the kind of thing that can oftentimes get people into trouble. Right? Again, we'll leave it at that. So the Nazir wants to lead a holy kind of life, you know, or a holy period of his life, so he swears off an intoxicant, you know, because he wants to stay clean. You know, he doesn't want to get himself into trouble in any way. That's certainly, I think, the simple understanding of the dinim of Nazir. And certainly, again, Rashi brings that to some extent in the Parsha. When the Parsha, you know, juxtaposes the dinim of Sota with the dinim of Nazir, why does the Torah do that? So Rashi famously quotes from Chazal, Shekara Sota b'kulkula yazir atzmo minayayin. If you see the Sota, the wayward wife, and everything that's done to her, you'll realize that sinning is a bad thing, and you'll stay away from wine, because wine often gets a person to do things that are under the influence and which he wouldn't do ordinarily. The question on that, and maybe this is what prompts the comment of the Avnei Nezer, is twofold. First of all, the Nazir stays away from wine specifically, not intoxicants in general. Can have bourbon, right? He can have something else which is intoxicating. So, you know, if it's intoxicants per se, which is the issue, so why is it davka wine? Number two, he stays away from grapes, you know, to such an extent that he's not even supposed to have the skins or the pits of grapes. So there too, you got to wonder, okay, so I understand, wine is an intoxicant. Grapes are not really intoxicating. I mean, it's hard to, you know, you don't see too many people getting high on grapes. So how do you understand that? Why is he staying away from this? So the Avnei Nezer says the fact that the Nazir stays away from wine and grapes is not really a function of the fact that they're intoxicating, but rather wine and grapes are associated with the Levian and with song. Ein omrim shira ela al hayayin. We only sing the praises of God in conjunction with wine, right? So many things we do in Jewish life that are singing the praises of God have to do with wine. We make Kiddush on wine, Havdalah on wine, a marriage ceremony over wine, a bris, you know, we make over wine, any kosher bracha we make over wine. And indeed, when did the Levim sing in the Beis HaMikdash? When the Nisachim, when the wine libations were being poured on top of the Mizbeach, on top of the altar. So wine and song go together. So the Nazir staying away from wine, says the Shem Yishmoel, is really about the Nazir staying away from song, and really staying away from public expressions. His Avodas Hashem, his service of God, is supposed to be private in nature. Another idea behind, another source for this idea, the Pasuk says, Isha Isha ki yafli lindar neder Nazir. When a man or a woman is mafli to vow the vow of the Nazir, this is what he should do. What's mafli? So it's an unusual word. Chazal understand that mafli means to explicate, to make explicit, right? To say to take the vow upon yourself with your mouth, you know, with your lips. But says the Shem Yishmoel, but there's another interpretation of yafli as well. Yafli is related to the word peli, which we actually find in the Haftarah, where it talks about Shimshon HaGibor being marked from the womb to be a Nazir. So the Malach, who announces the fact that Shimshon is going to be a Nazir, is asked, what's your name? He says, why ask? It's Peli. It's hidden. It's secret. So Ish Ki Yafli Lindar Neder Nazir, says the Shem Yishmoel, can be interpreted as when a person quietly or privately or secretly makes the vow to be a Nazir, meaning there's something that's supposed to be private about the very nature of the Nazirus, of the vow that the person takes upon himself. Now let's elaborate on that a little bit, because okay, it's very nice, you have a nice word, kiyafli, it means, it can be interpreted to mean private, but let's just look at the whole institution of Nazirus. What about Nazirus is private? I mean, in what sense would you say that a person who becomes a Nazir is taking upon himself a service of God which is private? So perhaps one can suggest the following. Again, he already spoke a little bit about how abstaining from wine is about abstaining from a public expression of song and gratitude to Hashem. What else does the Nazir do? He lets his hair grow long, right? One of the most distinctive aspects of a Nazir. So you say, that's not private. The guy walks down the street. And they say, whoa, wear your bell-bottom pants, you know? I mean, you know, what's up with the do, you know? I mean, that's a lot of hair, buddy. That's not private at all. Yeah, but what's represented by the fact that he grows his hair long? So perhaps one can suggest growing the hair long is a way of the person at least temporarily removing himself from society, right? Because in the society of that day, you wore your hair short, right? By growing your hair long, you're basically saying, I'm going to be a little bit of a hermit. I'm not going to fit in with everybody else. I'm going to remove myself. I'm going to be a little bit ascetic, you know, and kind of hold myself back from the rest of society. Perhaps that's what's involved in as well with the third prohibition that the Nazir has. He's not supposed to come into contact with a dead body. In other words, he can't go to funerals. Now, that also, in a weird kind of way, cuts him off from full integration into society. It means that he leads somewhat of a more private life. You know, everyone else is going to the funeral, and he stays home, right? He's not involved in that way. So, you know, these are three, you know, the point of being a Nazir is to retreat from society to some extent, you know, thus allowing the person to focus on his service of Hashem in a private kind of way, not in a public sort of way. Right. And again, you could argue the point with wine as well, right? Which, in other words, just to add on to what the Shemi Shmuel says, you know, if you're not going to drink wine, it means that you're not going to have a lot of social interactions with other people. I mean, again, that's why the rabbis, as we know, prohibited drinking wine that was handled by a non-Jew, because precisely they wanted to limit social interaction between Jews and non-Jews, right? So by, you know, abstaining from wine, abstaining from funerals, and, you know, abstaining from barbers, the guy is holding himself back from society.
There are other religions today that
have these kind of aesthetics. Yeah.
Is there such a sect?
Well, again, so the Nazir doesn't represent a sect. He's an individual, which actually speaks to the very point that the Shemi Shmuel is making. In other words, we don't have a class of Nazirim. You know, there's no caste of Nazirim or anything like that. A person chooses to be a Nazir, right? So, you know, the person is removing himself from society in that way, not in an organized kind of way. In fact, if it was an organized group of Nazirim, that would defeat the very point, according to the Shemi Shmuel, that it's a very private kind of worship. So that's what the Nazir does. The Nazir's way of serving Hashem is very private. Right? Similarly, Kohanim, Avo Kohanim Avodasam B'chashai. A Kohen also serves Hashem in a private kind of way. Now, if you think about it, it's a very interesting point that Shemi Shmuel proposes. Most of what the Kohanim do is done out of sight of the rest of the people. Right, again, we talk about the Kohen and the Karbanos and all of that. Who's watching the Karbanos? Nobody really. I mean, the Karbanos are mostly taking place in a part of the Beis HaMikdash where nobody really goes. Right? So the Kohanim are serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu also in a very private way. Who's public in Jewish life? The Levium. Because the Levium have two roles in the Beis HaMikdash. They open and close doors. They open the gates of the Beis HaMikdash. A very, you know, maybe not a glamorous role, but a very public role. You know, everybody knows the doorman, right? So it's a very public kind of role. And the Levium were the choir in the Beis HaMikdash. They sang such that everybody heard. So you have this interesting framework, if you will, says the Shemi Shmuel. Kohanim represent the idea of serving God in private. Levium represent the idea of serving God in public. And the Nazir, like the Kohen, also represents the idea of serving God in private. The Al-Kain, Shmuel, Shahaya Nazir Olam, Vahaya Levi, Hayu Boshte Amidos Yachtov. So let's come now to what we started off the Shia with. Shmuel Hanavi, say Chazal, is equal to Moshe and Aaron put together. So Shmuel was a Levi. Shmuel was also, say Chazal, a Nazir. He was a Nazir Olam. He was a Nazirite his entire life. Right? So, as a personality, he combined two very different ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As a Levi, he served God in public. As a Nazir, he served God in private. Now, I just want to add to this for a moment, right? I think this is not just clever, right? On one level, it's clever, you know, and as Shmuel was a Nazir and a Levi. Oh, so Nazir equals private, Levi equals public. So Shmuel was private and public together. Ah, very nice. You know, it's not just clever, but it happens to fit the description of Shmuel HaNavi that we have from Tanakh. Because if you think about it, Shmuel really played two very important roles. On the one hand, he was the leader of the Jewish people, right? In other words, he played an administrative role in Klal Yisrael. I mean, he essentially was leading Klal Yisrael until he anointed Shaul HaMelech to be king. At the same time, he was also a Navi. He was also a prophet, which is a far more private kind of role than the role that he played as a public leader. So this observation of the Shem Yishmuel that Shmuel HaNavi, you know, was a man of many hats, so to speak. You know, he was both a private individual, someone who served God in private, as well as someone who served God in public. He had a very public persona and a very private persona. That's not just like a clever manipulation of the, you know, of these ideas. That really does fit. You know, that really is the role of Shmuel HaNavi as described to us in Sefer Shmuel. In contrast, if you look at Moshe and Aaron, right? So Moshe was a Levi, Aaron was a Kohen. And if you think about it, those two roles also fit the roles that they play in Klal Yisrael. If we look in the Chumash, Moshe was the ultimate public personality. It doesn't get much more public than that. I mean, he was the public leader of the Jewish people. What was Aaron's role vis-a-vis the Jewish people? So his involvement with the Jewish people was much more on a private, personal level. We know Chazal tell us that Aaron was famous for causing couples who were having arguments with one another to make up, right? You know, he would settle disputes between friends, right? So that's a beautiful thing. It's a very private, out of the public eye kind of leadership, whereas Moshe Rabbeinu was constantly in the public eye, right? The one time that Aaron finds himself in the public eye, you know, in the whole episode of the Egel Azov, the golden calf, is an episode that doesn't really turn out all that well, right? I mean, Aaron's avoda is much better in a private kind of sector. Moshe's avoda is much better in a public kind of sector. So says the Shem Yishmuel, when Shmuel is like Moshe and Aaron, it doesn't mean that, you know, Shmuel is, you know, as great a person as Moshe and Aaron put together. It's just expressing the idea that whereas Moshe had one role and Aaron had a second role, Shmuel in his life managed to combine both roles, both that of Moshe and of Aaron. He was a public person and a private person, you know, much at the same time. He then makes an interesting observation. Says the Shem Yishmuel, "Fiza Yishlomar Shahainu Hach Shakostuv Diber Mi Malbushov Shenemar Meil Katan Taselo Imo V'Chein Ish Zokin Ole V'Hu Ota Meil." We find an interesting thing with Shmuel HaNavi that we don't really find with too many other characters in Tanakh. Shmuel Hanavi's dress is described in two different places in the Navi. When he's a child, it says that his mother Chana made him a little me'il, a little coat, right? And after he dies, the famous story that's told in the Tanakh with the Balas Ov of Endor, that after Shmuel had died, Shaul HaMelech felt compelled to call up the spirit of Shmuel and to ask his advice. Again, a very, very interesting story that appears in the Tanakh. So it says that when Shmuel HaNavi was called up as a spirit, he appeared as an elderly man, v'hu ota me'il, wearing a coat. So striking. So as a kid, the Navi tells us he was wearing a coat, right? His mother knit him a sweater, right? And as a dead spirit called up from the dead, he's described as wearing a coat. What do I care that he's wearing a coat? Okay, so his mother knit him a sweater. Very nice, good, wonderful. Maybe it said Shmuley on the back. I don't know, you know? I mean, so why do I care? Why is that important for me to know? And why do I care that when he gets called up from the dead, by the way, you know, he has his frock on. You know, what do I care? I don't care that he's wearing a coat. So apparently that's important, says the Shemesh one. It's important in the following way. Again, the Shemesh one quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer, asking the following interesting question. We find that the Torah speaks at length about the garments that the Kohanim would wear. Right, the whole parsha of Tetzaveh that's basically devoted to describing the clothing worn by the Kohanim. What about the clothing worn by the Levim? Doesn't sound like the Levim had any special clothing. So that's interesting if you think about it. I mean, the Levim served in the Beis HaMikdash as well. I mean, lahavdil, but if you think about it, even a doorman in an apartment in Manhattan wears the uniform. Right, so let's say the Levim were in the choir in the Beis HaMikdash and they were the doormen. Alright, so they should have a uniform. Right? I mean, if a doorman in Manhattan wears a uniform, so a doorman of the Beis HaMikdash should wear a uniform. I don't know what it would say on it exactly. You know, maybe Temple University on the back or something like that. I don't know. But, you know, they should have bow ties, ephes for the choir, you know, something, you know. You go to a simcha and everybody's wearing, you know, all of the members of the band are wearing a special getup. So why shouldn't the Levim wear a special getup? That's the Shemesh Shmuel is. Why, how come the Kohanim have a special garb and the Levim don't have a special garb? So he says, Yishuv Shabigodim Morim Al Pnimius Shid Sarech Lios Nelam V'al Kein Kohanim Shem Pnimium Srichim Begodim V'lo Alevim. He says an interesting idea, sort of, it's a little bit counterintuitive to what I think we would think naturally. He says, if somebody wears special clothing, it's a sign that there's something internal that they have that needs to be covered. In other words, there's something private about them that requires a special covering of clothes. We said before that the Kohanim's Avodas Hashem, that the Kohanim's service of God was primarily internal. They were private in their service of God. Because they were private, there was an emphasis on clothes, because clothes keep that which is private, private. They cover over that which is internal. In contrast, the Avoda of the Levim was external. It was public. So when something is public and external, you don't need special clothes in order to cover it over, because it's all about what's on the outside. Right? So it's a little bit counterintuitive, because you and I would think that if the Kohanim have special clothing, that calls more attention to their externals. If the Levim don't have special clothing, that calls less attention to their externals. But the Shemesh Shmuel says exactly the opposite. Because the Kohanim are all about pnimius, they're all about what's inside, so therefore there's a greater emphasis on the clothing in order to mask that which is inside, to cover that which is inside. And conversely, the Levim, who are all about what's external, all about serving God on the outside, they don't need the clothing in order to, you know, to cover anything up, because it's not meant to be covered. Their Avodas Hashem is supposed to be out there in the open. So, with that idea, it's a very interesting idea. Again, to me, I find it a little bit counterintuitive, but it's an interesting idea that, you know, how should we put it? Clothes make the private man, right? That's what the Shemesh Shmuel is saying, right? The more clothing, the more private the person ultimately really is. That's what he says. That's why the Navi in two places stresses the clothing of Shmuel HaNavi. The sweater his mother made him as a child, and the coat that he was wearing when he was called up from the dead, you know, as a spirit. Again, why do we care about his coat, you know? The answer is, he says, is because Al Kain Shmuel Shahisabo Gam Hamaila Shel Pnimius. Shmuel was a Levi, right? So he was on one level about the externals, but he was also a Nazir. So on a second level, he was also about Pnimius, about the inner life, about a private service of God. So to emphasize the privacy of Shmuel, the Navi in two places speaks about this me'il, this cloak that he had, because again, clothing makes the private man. Clothing makes the inner man. Right? So Shmuel, the emphasis on the me'il is to show us that, you know, there's this inner dimension to Shmuel associated with the Nazirus. And he says, V'yeshlomar, let me take it even further, says the Shemi Shmuel. Why focus on the fact that he's wearing a me'il, a coat? Why the coat of all things? So he says, Ki me'il ha-kodesh hu memutza ben pnimius lehiskalus. Shrei imshu hu lovush ha-michzek siv nami v'nishma kolo b'vore la-kodesh. Al-kein me'il Shmuel romes l'sesh ayu bo shneim pnimius lehiskalus. He offers again the following fascinating insight. Says the Shemi Shmuel, out of all of the garments that one could have, a coat, a jacket, indicates both pnimius as well as chitzonius. How so? So let's consider the me'il, the coat that was worn by the Kohen Gadol. It says regarding the coat of the Kohen Gadol that there were bells sewn onto the hem of the coat of the Kohen Gadol, and this way says the pasuk, "V'nishma kolo bevo el hakodesh." When the Kohen Gadol would walk around, the bells would jingle, and you know you could hear the fact that he was moving around. So, in other words, the me'il represents privacy; it covers what's underneath, but it also represents a certain public dimension because it makes noise as the person moves around. Right, we might add, because again, as the Shemesh Shmuel himself points out, okay, the Kohen Gadol's me'il had bells, but presumably Shmuel Hanavi's coat didn't have bells on it. You know, he wasn't a Belzer Chosid. He might have been a Nazir and a Levi, but he wasn't a Belzer, right? But you know, so that's a kasha on the Shemesh Shmuel. Perhaps we can just add as follows, and again, I think you can add this to what the Shemesh Shmuel is saying. A jacket, a coat, out of all of the begadim that a person wears, is both revealing but concealing at the same time, right? Because the jacket typically, a coat typically opens up, right? I mean, the me'il of the Kohen Gadol also, you know, it was similar to the jackets we have today. So it conceals, but it doesn't conceal entirely. I mean, a jacket doesn't cover everything. If a person walked around without a shirt and just a jacket, you know, there'd still be quite a bit of his body that he'd be revealing. The jacket covers part of the person, but not the entirety of the person. So the jacket of all of the begadim, the me'il of all of the different articles of clothing, is both revealing and concealing. The same way that, again, Shmuel Hanavi is both revealed as well as concealed. He's a Levi, but a Nazir. You know, he's Moshe, but he's Aaron. And as he has both of these facets within his personality, and the Me'il represents the fact that he has them both. V'ulai zeh she'amru chazal b'znei Aaron nodav aviyu sh'ayu chaseirim me'il. If we want to carry this jacket idea a little bit further, he says, we find Chazal say that one of the sins that Chazal attribute to Nadav and Avihu, the two sons of Aaron, who did something wrong and were killed on the very first day that the Mishkan was dedicated, one of the sins Chazal ascribed to them is that they went into the Mishkan without wearing the me'il, without wearing the jacket. So what's up with that? I mean, so because you don't wear a jacket going into the Ohel Moed, into the Mishkan, that's it, you get zapped, right? What's with that? Right? So perhaps the symbolism of their not wearing a jacket, not wearing a coat, is that Nadav and Avihu wanted to reveal things that really should be concealed. In other words, it's a metaphor more than anything else. Not just that they forgot to put their jacket on, they forgot to put their coat on. But their failure to wear the coat, their failure to wear the jacket, was an expression of the fact that they were saying it's time to reveal certain things which to date have been concealed. Right? And By the same token, says the Shem Yishmua, we also find in Chazal that they went into the Mishkan having drunk wine, which normally you're not supposed to do. So what's that all about? We know when it comes to wine, Nichnas Yayin Yatzas Sod. Chazal tell us when wine comes in, the secrets go out, as many an alcoholic can attest to, right? The wine goes in, the secrets go out. So why would they dafka drink before they went into the Mishkan? The answer is similar to the to the fact that they went in without jackets. It represented the idea that they were ready to reveal that which to this point had been concealed, right? Drinking wine meant they wanted to let it all out, so to speak. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, no, there's certain things that are supposed to be kept under wraps. There's a certain privacy which, needs to be maintained even as you go into the Mishkan. Right, so the Kohanim had a hat as part of their part of the clothing that they would wear. I mean, it wasn't the yarmulke, but they did have a kind of a hat, that they would wear. But interesting. Well, it's interesting because, in terms of clothing and Miksonas Pasim, let's say in particular, where obviously that aroused the jealousy of the brothers, the coat of many colors of Joseph. On the one hand, a coat is concealing. On the other hand, the message that's sent by a coat is that I have what to conceal. Right? So, it's a two-way street, meaning it does conceal, but it also can arouse jealousy because, if you have what to conceal, that means there's something there. There's some kind of importance which you feel necessary to keep under wraps. Right? So, I think it cuts both ways. As I said, after Mayav, we'll pick up. We saw this piece in its entirety. There's a short piece which follows, which as Ezra Hashem, I want to see when we pick up after Mayav. Okay, so this is the second half of the Shem Yishmuel Shia Parshas Noso. Really, just want to do a very relatively quick piece, a small piece. Kvod Kedushas Ovi Admor Zatzal Omer Atam Shenozir Oster B'Tumas Krovi V'Kohen Mutter. The Shem Yishmuel, again, as he so often does, quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer, on the following. Again, we spoke in the first half of this year about some of the halachas that are relevant to a nozir. One of the halachas that a nozir has is he's not matamel meitzim, he's not allowed to come into contact with a dead body. And in that way, he's somewhat similar to a kohen, but with one major exception. The kohen is allowed to be matamel krovim. The kohen is allowed to come into contact with the dead bodies of seven close relatives. Right, his parents, his siblings, his wife, his children, Rahman al-Islam. The Nazir has none of those exceptions. Kol Nefesh Meis Lo Yovo. The Nazir is not allowed to go to his father's funeral, his mother's funeral, etc., etc., etc. Even the closest relatives, the Nazir is not allowed to be Matami to. So the question is, why is that? Why should there be no exception for Tumas Krovim for coming into contact with the bodies of close relatives for the Nazir? He offers an interesting explanation from his father. Mishum shekohen kedushaso mitzad atolado, avo nazir shekedushaso mitzad atzmo, ein lo tziruf el krovim ad kan tochen devarav. Said the Avnei Nezer, a kohen's kedusha comes from his family, right? It comes to him at birth because of who his family is. So if his family plays a role in making him into who he is, so there's an exception made that he can be matami lemesim, that he can come into contact with dead bodies if they're close family members. Again, even those family members that didn't play a role in making him into what he is. In other words, he can be matami to his wife, to his siblings, to his children. Right? They clearly don't make him into a kohen. His parents, or not even really his parents, really his father, who makes him into a kohen. But nonetheless, family shapes him. So he's allowed to be matame to those who are family. In contrast, the nazir isn't made by family. The nazir is made by himself. He himself creates his kedusha. It's the nazir who takes the vow, who makes himself into a nazir. So if you're not being shaped by your family, right, you're being shaped by yourself or created by yourself, so then this exception to the rule for Tumas Krovim doesn't apply. So based on this idea, very interesting idea, the Shem Yishmuel then says the following. Well, Lefizdik. What's that? Right, so Meis Mitzvah L'chari is just an exception because of the pressing need for somebody to take care of the Meis Mitzvah. Right, right. So in other words, but again, that's less about his Kedusha as the Nazir and more about the needs of the Meis Mitzvah that they have to be accommodated. But he has the following. L'fizdik move on Hodekoin Gadol Nami Oster L'tamos L'krovim. Based on this, you know, what my father said, perhaps we can understand why a Kohen Gadol is also not allowed to come into contact with the dead bodies, even of his relatives. Again, the Kohen Gadol can be metamei l'meis mitzvah, but our Kol Nefesh meis lo yavon, as he can't be metamei to his parents, his children, whatever. Mishum shemalos tozo shenas the Kohen Gadol he machmas ma'ilas atzma. Because the Kohen Gadol, in a sense, is also a self-made man. Meaning, he becomes a Kohen by birth. But he doesn't become a Kohen Gadol by birth. That's something that he has to earn. And he goes on to explain. Lulei Milas Asmo Haya Kohen Hedyot. Had it not been for his own qualities, he would have remained the regular Kohen. V'ap ha-mismaneh tachas aviv. So how do you become a Kohen Gadol? Right? What's the process? So, Shem Yishmael points out, the truth is, typically speaking, the office of Kohen Gadol is heredity, right? Meaning, you know, it passes from father to son. Typically speaking, in other words, the son gets first crack at being Kohen Gadol once his father passes away. Typically, but not automatically. Even if someone is appointed to take over for his father, but you know, it's not an automatic thing. He has to be found fit for being Kohen Gadol. Right? He needs to be appointed proactively. He has to be somebody who, you know, is worthy of taking over his father. In other words, you know, the Gemara Lamashal tells the story of when Shimon HaTzadik passed away. Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara indicates that you know, that Shimon HaTzadik actually favored his younger son to be his Memalei Makom. Right, right, exactly, right. So as he favored his younger son, meaning, you know, it's not just a question of you know, stepping into the position automatically. You have to be deserving, right? I mean, you have a better shot if your father was Kohen Gadol, but it's not automatic. And that's why every Kohen Gadol needs Minoy. That's why every Kohen Gadol needs to be appointed specifically. You know, that's why every Kohen Gadol is anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, with the oil. Again, to indicate that it's not an automatic thing, right? So, to become a Kohen Gadol, you need to have personal ma'ilus. You know, you need to have personal attributes and personal qualities. It's not just enough, you know, you don't get the position by birth. Because the krovim, the relatives, played no role in, you know, you're stepping into the position of Kohen Gadol. So when you step into the position of Kohen Gadol, you don't, so to speak, you don't owe the krovim anything, and you don't have that concept of being metame lemesim, you know, metame lekrovim, of attending the funerals of the krovim to show them respect. But, right, so ultimately it seems like the Melech and the Sanhedrin both play a role. They both play a role. In other words, the Sanhedrin would decide, would have to confirm the appointment. Again, I imagine that many times in history, you know, it was kind of, you know, more or less just confirming what everybody knew already, you know, in terms of, you know, as if the Kohen Gadol had a son who was fit to take over the Kohuna Gadola. So it was kind of a, you know, it was a no-brainer that he would step in, but... Right, so for most of the Baisheni period, either the Hasmoneans were in charge and they didn't really care what the Sanhedrin said, or the Romans were in charge and they also didn't really care what the Sanhedrin said. You know, so the Sanhedrin didn't have, you know, they had power, but not that much power. It's a Mishnah, I think. No, it's a Mishnah. I think he's not Matami Lekrovim. Right, right. Right. So I think that. Doesn't the Mishnah say that he's also has the dinim that he's not a tamei l'krovim? I think so. I think it's the Mishnah in Megillah. I think so. It's interesting. So according to the Shemi Shmuel, the Avnei Nezer, he gives us an interesting twist on why one would be matami l'krovim. Meaning, ordinarily I would say, why are you matami l'krovim? Because it's too much to ask, you know, of even a kohen to not attend his parents' funeral or something of that nature. Here, I think the way the Shemi Shmuel, the Avnei Nezer, are portraying it is that it's an inyan of hakaras hatov. It's a certain type of gratitude. Meaning, If your family made you who you are, you can't turn your backs on them. If they didn't make you who you are, and if you're a self-made man like a Nazir or Kohen Gadol, okay, so then you can turn your backs on them, at least, you know, in this. But, you know, if they made you into something, you can't then turn around and ignore them. You know, they made you a Kohen, you can't say, well, I'm a Kohen, so therefore I can't have what to do with them when they pass away. There's a certain, you know, aspect of kfiya betov. There's a certain, you know, lack of gratitude, you know, to display that that kind of perspective when they created you and made you who you are, right? I think perhaps the principle to be extrapolated from the Shemi Shmuel is that, you know, in life sometimes, you know, unfortunately people step on the very people who helped them get into a position, right? You know, somebody in life helped me get position X, you know, and then, you know, once I'm high and mighty, I turn around that I don't show the requisite hakaras hatov for the person who got me into that position, right? So this dinner being matami lakrovim, you know, for the kohen, according to the Shemi Shmuel, the Avnei Nezer, is teaching us the opposite of that. If somebody makes you who you are, you can never forget that person, even if at a later point that person becomes vulnerable and you're in a better position than them. You always have to show them that hakaras hatov for having made you what you are today. Maybe yeah, maybe no. I mean, right? I mean, you know, maybe it's not politically correct to say, but I mean, maybe no. Maybe the parents are lousy people, and he doesn't, you know, he didn't necessarily pick up that, you know, that kind of hashkafa from his parents. If it's possible, you know. A kohen, you can only become a kohen through your father. There's no other way to become a kohen, right? But Nizirus and Kahuna Gadola, let's put it this way, at the very least, you know, he didn't need, you know, his parental involvement in order to take on those, you know, those particular roles. Yeah. Right, so there are examples where a parent can adopt Nazirus for the child, right? And again, obviously, you know, Nazirus, which is adopted by a parent, which by a father, doesn't exempt the father from, you know, Tumas Krovim, right? No, right. So, you know, I guess what the Shemi Shmuel of the Avnei Nezer would say to that is that, you know, Shem knows the Rechod Hu. In other words, you know, the Torah just makes a blanket rule with regard to Nazirim. But I mean, the point that Rabbi Tachman is making is well taken. You know, if you follow through logically, so then when a father makes a child into a Nazir, you know, you would think that there would be some kind of exception for Tumas Krovim for the father, but, you know, again, perhaps the answer just seems to be that the dinim of Nazir are universal, and, you know, there are no exceptions made in this regard. Okay, that's the short little piece I just wanted to share. Bez Hashem, we will pick up next week also following Mincha with Parashas Ba'alotcha. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, Omer Rosak.